This session was recorded at Journey Underground, a recovery ministry of Journey Christian Church in Fairbanks, Alaska.
I want to brag on the gospel a little bit tonight here about the resurrection life. Does anyone have John 10:10 they could kind of read out loud for everybody? John 10, verse 10, so that everyone can hear it, maybe? I've come to give you life, and a life abundantly, more abundantly. All right. My life has been radically changed by the gospel. You know, my life has been marked completely by broken relationships, drug addiction beyond anything I want to go into, jail sentences and probation and all that kind of stuff, cops. I won't even get into that. People get involved in all kinds of things for reasons that I hope I... you know, help explain tonight a bit. People all the time ask, what is the meaning of life? Especially when we go through times of depression or we're going around the mountain again. What's the meaning of life? But I think a better question would be, what is life? And that's kind of the question that we've talked about before. What is life itself? Maybe is a better question. In Genesis, the first chapter, we see God creating life. And we see all these different forms of life present, where he created plant life, right? He creates fish life, bug life, bird life, animal life. But then we have angelic life. I thought it was interesting what Kennedy talked about a little bit last week about the two highest life forms that both disobeyed God, which I thought was really interesting connection. We have angelic life, but we also have a higher life form than that. We have Zoe life. We have the highest life form possible is the God kind of life. And so this is what we're talking about, Zoe life. We see in Genesis 2:7, I'm going to just diagram this on the board. God created man out of the dust of the earth, right? He gave us a body, perfect body there. He breathed into these nostrils the breath of life. And he gave us a spirit. It says, and then man became a living soul. And so we'll put that soul right here in the middle. Hopefully that makes sense to everybody. Does that make sense to everybody? God created man of the dust of the earth, breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And then man became a living soul. The tie between our body here on earth and our spirit is our soul. And so we have here God. We have down here Satan and his angelic forces. And we have here Adam and Eve. We see God creating them. And I'm just going to kind of put these little lines showing who they were. Adam and Eve were not the janitors of the earth. You know, they weren't the gardeners. They were the king and queen of the earth. They were the rulers of the world. That's what we were destined to be, is to have dominion, to have command, to be an image bearer of God. These guys had the Zoe life. They had the highest life form possible breathed within them. And this is how they operated in their mind, will, and emotions out of this incredible power source of the Zoe life of God. Highest life form absolutely possible. And of course, as we know the story, there's the two trees. The tree of life, where God had somehow fashioned a tree where the Zoe life form could be taken in an edible form. We could actually eat this life and take it in. But there was another tree, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. It's a tree of our own understanding. It's kind of our declaration of independence from God. He said that the moment you eat of this tree, that's when you'll die. And as we know the story, they did eat from the tree, and we did die. We fell as men, and that's the tough part. And so this whole end just kind of closes down, and we die spiritually here. We had a death of spirit. We had a death, therefore, of soul, of our personality. They could no longer relate to one another in the garden the way they had before, and they began to die physically. So this is kind of the question here is, where are we going to get this? like the God kind of life that shined down into us, where we operated out of this, the highest life form possible operating in us. You know, God of the universe is in relation with me, and he tells me who I am. I'm a son of God, a king of the world. And then that whole thing falls, and the door shuts. Where am I going to get that from? That kind of identity and that kind of power, that kind of security and significance. And you can see their eyes begin to fall on the world around them. Say, well, I'm going to get it from you. You know, what you do for me. I'm going to get it from you. You know, I'm going to get it from the car I drive. I'm going to get it from my body. You know, the way I look. And the way things make me feel. You know, my status in life. You know, I'm going to begin to manipulate things around me to get that. I mean, is that going to even work at all? But, I mean, this is what we're forced into. So, if you put yourself in their shoes in that time, you know, what an overwhelming sense of insecurity must have felt over them as they lost their identity. And an overwhelming sense of insignificance. You know, security and significance now become a need where it used to be an attribute. You know, it used to be something that they were. And now it's something they need. You know, totally different deal here. And so this is really where all of our problems develop, is out of this combination we're talking about. And all of our temptations as believers is really to a temptation to operate and get our needs met through a self life in my own way, you know, under my own control. And, you know, before we fell, Adam and Eve didn't even want life. You see, they were drawn to the other tree. You know, they're not surrounding the tree of life. They're surrounding the forbidden tree. And I think part of it is they did not appreciate or couldn't appreciate what they had in front of them. I mean, as soon as they fell and we lost life and we gained death, now we want life. You know, now we want it really, really bad. And so this is kind of what this whole thing's about. And we see, as a fallen person in my body, we have doctors now because we're fallen. And they kind of look at our physical bodies as chemical factories, and they look for what is wrong with us through, you know, our organs and the chemicals they make and what's going on, the symptoms. I mean, and they're pretty good at it, you know. We need doctors, but they kind of look at us as a physical being, and we have our soul, our mind, will, and emotions. So we have psychologists, and they look at us in that realm, and they're really good at figuring those things out. People are amazing. But we have our spiritual life, and this is where we have ministers that come and treat us spiritually. And each one has a tendency to think that that's where, you know, everything lies, is in their realm of, you know, where they specialize. And so this person will grow up and get an identity from other people, you know, an outer source, how the world reflects me back to me, right? How everyone treats you growing up, what they tell you. You know, I saw some kind of goofy study where this guy wore a particular shirt and they had so many people come up and compliment him. You know, a couple of girls come up and a guy said something and another lady said something about this wonderful shirt. And so all of a sudden this guy's wearing this shirt all the time, you know, and it's all because of, you know, the feedback he was receiving when he was wearing this shirt. You know, none of it was real, but I mean, this is the effect that these things have on us, is we'll gain an identity, just like my wife talked about how the world reflects me back to me. So I can get an identity that way. I'll get an identity from an inner world, kind of my view of me, and I'll get that from many different sources, but I'll kind of make a call on who I am. I'll get an identity from God. I can get that from who God says I am, what he says about reality. I can get it from Satan. in the physical realm I can get from my parents or the environment in which I'm raised in and all these things. But what I really need is life. I mean, you can see it right there on the board. What kind of life do we need? Do I need bug life? Plant life? Some people think they need plant life with some of the new laws they're passing. And it's interesting with plants because, you know, we make drugs out of them. You know, and many of us have operated, I know for me, where plant life has had dominion over me. I mean, I barely made it past bug life. You know, I can't even have dominion over a plant. And I know that God comes to me and tells me, Stan, I want you to have dominion over the plant. Come on. You know, we're way above that. And it's just a wonderful thing to have this. Fish life? No. Bird? No. Animal? Not even angelic life. I need what I was made to have. I need the Zoe life. I need the highest life form possible burning within me, giving me identity and empowering me. And if I'm going to get that, I need it from someone who's going to be able to deliver that to me. Someone I can truly trust has the goods. And just like Derek was saying up here, someone that has proven that they have it and they can deliver. So whatever we go through trying to find life, you know, how do you define life? You know, life to me is what? You know? I mean, me growing up in a house of prostitution and drug addiction, life was the love of women and drugs. That was life. Just being honest. Life is that to me. You know, women and drugs. You know, I was raised to think that. I believed it. When I experienced it, it seemed like life to me. But it wasn't life. It brought death to me. It brought a lot of death. And so, what would you define as life? And what would you define as death? So at some point, we come to the end of our own resource, right? And when we do, we can discover his. And so, who would get this back for us would be a person that was qualified. It was lost by a man. It would have to be taken back by a man. It was lost by an image bearer, someone who bore the image of God, and it would have to be taken back by an image bearer, someone who was perfect as a son of God. It was lost by mistrust and not believing God, and it would have to be taken back through faith by believing and trusting him, you know, the very way we lost it. So we lost this tree. We lost the tree of life. I don't know how much that is a reality to you, but it is very much a reality to me. I don't know how, you know, it's fun to work with a little bit older people sometimes in recovery because they get it. They go, you know, we've tried everything. It's not there, you know. And sometimes it's like, you know, you can go around and around and try it, but you can become very exhausted and realize this world doesn't have it. You know, you're just not going to find it. It's not there. We lost the tree of life. So Jesus is our champion. You know, he has the qualifications. He has the qualifications to be this life, to get this life back from us, to actually be this life. And this is the crazy thing about the tree of life. Is he comes along saying things like, I'm the bread of life. You know, the person that eats him has life. He says things like, take and eat. I want you to take and eat. This is my body. He says things like, I'm the vine and you're the branches. You know, unless you're connected to me, you're not going to be able to do anything. And in the garden, Adam and Eve failed the test. And we see Jesus in the garden saying, not my will, but your will, under intense pressure, passing the test of temptation, of saying, I am going to trust my Father's plan. He's the author of life. He's the giver of life. And we see just absolutely amazing when he rose again, standing outside of the tomb in a garden when Mary came to see him. We see restored the tree of life. There Mary stands in front of Jesus himself, the tree of life, the author of life, the giver of life, standing right in front of her in a garden is the tree restored for all of us to have. The very Zoe life of God. And he tells us that those who receive him, those who believe in him, put their trust in him, they have actually passed from death to life. And when we do that, a very simple thing happens, but profound. He gives us within us his Holy Spirit. And I'm going to put that as this little red triangle. The very Zoe life of God. Seems undramatic. You ever seen anybody pass from life to death? You ever seen anyone just die? I mean, I watched my father die. Died in my arms. And it was like the lights just went out. And there he went. He was here. And he was gone. There was no... He was just gone. It was very silent. It was a very holy moment. And in the same way, we can pass from death to life. Just a very quiet transaction, but very, very profound. And I like how my wife puts it. She says Easter's like a reverse funeral, you know. And the moment we receive him, his life within us, we are no longer powerless. We're no longer at a step one where our lives are unmanageable. We have a new power source. But the problem is, the state we're left in is no one pushes the clear button. You know, all of my memories are still here. All my old conditioning, all my old ways of thinking, all my old ways of operating and coping with pressure, they're all still here, even though I have a new identity and I have his very spirit living within me. I still have all of this stuff to deal with. And he leads us on a great adventure of dealing with all the ways in life that we have been deceived. And he wants us to then embark on this journey where we can be what we have become. And the goal isn't information. It's intimacy. It's a deep knowing of who he is. And this is not easy stuff. I want to say it's easy. It's not easy. To have intimacy with God is a lot of work. And you have to be very intentional about it. Intimacy with God is so profound and powerful. You know, an infant is designed to breastfeed. And the whole idea of formula, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, you know. It's not my decision to make. And but what I'm saying is, I think the whole idea was bonding, not just nutrition. And when we make a formula and go, that's what it's all about, it's not what it's all about. There's a bonding. And I just love to watch my grandkids. And I was watching my brother's little baby. He has a disabled son. And he just stares at his dad's face. He just stares at it. And he's just taking in his father's gaze. I mean, this bonding is so profound. It's so important to bond with our new father. Some people, that sounds weird. You know, I look at people all the time across the table and go, how are you bonding with your new father? And they're just looking at me like I'm a piece of broccoli. You know what I mean? They're like, you know. If we don't bond with our new father, then it's all intellectual. It's just knowledge. It's just a book. And I'm telling you, God did not. He didn't die for me to have a relationship with a book. He died for me to have a relationship with the one who wrote the book and the one who permeates this book. who makes this come alive to me. He wants me to read it with him, to him, from him, in him, all these ways. When I stand before God, he hides me in Christ. When I stand before the world, he has Christ in me. Oh, what a powerful thing he has. So the truth begins to set us free from ways we've been deceived. You know, like my wife shared that story, and I'm so thankful that she's so transparent about the things she's been through. They're pretty brutal, and you just don't see evidence of it on her life. She's just the most tender, sweet person you ever meet. Just filled with love. And it's the forgiveness in that receiving of her new dad, her new father, that does it for her, that simple faith. But he'll begin to challenge things you believe. He'll take you into situations purposely to bump up into beliefs that you have and say, let's talk about this. Ways we've been deceived in our lives about sex, how we've thought about it. Music, how that's influenced us. You know, what that's kind of done to us. Music has a powerful role in our lives, in worship, and the desires that it brings us towards, and our focus. Witchcraft, idol worship, sorcery, things that we cling to, trinket power, where he's power. You know, anybody got Acts 19:19? They want to read? Just make sure you read it really loud so everybody can hear Acts 19:19. That's amazing. This is their reaction to the gospel's power in leading them in ways that they've been deceived, as they just piled up their idols. And to me, those were needles and different things. They were totally different than those things. But it was music. It was all the things I clung to. He'll lead you into ways you've been wounded and hurt. And this is where we're headed. Next week, we're going to start looking at how he heals our wounds, the ways we've been hurt. We receive a wound, and with the wound is a lie that comes right in. And with that lie will be a vow. And out of that vow will come a pattern or a stronghold that maybe it serves its purpose at the time, but now it's in the way. My wife developed many, many patterns in her upbringing of how to hide and run within herself when violence came her way or something that scared her, and that helped her survive. But now it's in the way, and she has wheeled on that belief. She's pulled that thing up by the roots, and you just don't see it. She'll wheel right around and go, and let me tell you another thing. Right? And I'm like, go for it. Go for it. And you see that strength come out. That all these ways, things we've lived by, are based on a true need to be secure, and a true need to find that significance. And he's not condemning us. He's come to the world to save us, not condemn us. We don't have to hide our stuff. I can pull all the stuff out of my pockets and lay it on the table. And go, this is what I've been operating with. And he wants to replace each thing with something superior. He wants to make us just shine before him and have that Zoe life come out through integrity and honesty and wield it through salvation and its power, the power of love. I'll just tell you guys real quick before I shut this down tonight. I'm just bragging on the Lord, though. As we were setting this thing up, and sometimes we come into a lot of, me and my wife are very stubborn, and we can't even move a table together a couple feet without arguing about how it's supposed to be done. You know, it's just the way we are. We've accepted it a long time ago. So what we do is say, you're in charge of moving that table, I'm in charge of moving this table, and we can get along. We have to kind of decide who's in charge. Well, we come in here, we're going at it, and I set some stuff up. She comes in here, oh, no, no, and starts moving it around, and I'm like, hey, you know, I command you. And, yeah, I try the submit verse. It doesn't work very well for me. I got really angry. I mean, I started getting really angry, and I thought, you know what? What's going on here? You know? And I go back in the back, and I just sit down, and I said, Lord, what's happening? What do you want from me here? And I just waited until everything passed and settled, and just this quiet peace comes over me. And it was like, Stan, the most important thing you can do right this moment is love her. Love the person that is the only person that you're with right now. Love that person. Just, that's all I'm asking. There's only one person right now in the whole world that you happen to be with. Love that person. And I said, fine. I knew that was, and we just came out here and I just started loving her. Said, I'm sorry. And his peace just comes over everything. Everything falls into place. And these are the new ways of operating, where that inventory work, taking a look within, asking him what's going on. I don't know about you guys, but I'm always afraid that God is going to be doing the most powerful, significant, incredible work right outside my front door. The most incredible turn of history is happening right outside my front door. And I'm over in my basement tying and retying and retying and retying my shoes. Because that would happen to me, you know, that. It's what happens to me in my head. I get in a loop. And I get in this weird loop. And I get in this weird loop. And it doesn't even matter. And I'm not out there loving people. I'm not out there doing what I was designed to do. I'm not loving with the love of God. I'm tying my shoes and retying my shoes and retying my shoes. And I know that God has freedom for someone like me if I just give him the space and the time, share with another brother what's happening to me, and let them have insight, let them have say, let them share. The wisdom I've heard from these tables across from you guys has just blown me away. Just a simple statement sets me free sometimes. Sometimes a knock on the head. But what he's doing here is he's making us into sons and daughters of God. He's already adopted you. He's already said, okay, you're mine. You're all mine. Mine, mine, mine. You're all mine. I put a little crown on your head and you're so beautiful to me. You're my royal daughter. Forever and ever, you're mine, mine. Now let me train you and show you how a daughter of God lives. And confronts and sees and leans on her big dad when things get hard. And he can do it, and he's doing it. Next week, we're going to start looking at some serious wound stuff, healing damaged emotions and those kinds of things. And I'm really excited about it. The things that my wife has learned through the things she's been through. And I hope you guys will bring a friend and bring some people. We have really, really prayed over this stuff. And this year's theme has been God as our Father. And He is a mighty Father. Don't think for one moment that you are outside of the table and you don't have a place right here with the family. And there's a setting just for you. You're not a servant. You have a place. And you're part of the family. And you matter. You matter more than you think. And if you run out there and think you don't matter, we're coming after you. One of the things Derek preaches a lot about is a small group. And it's so important to be part of that. And I read a statistic said that people who are part of a small group actually live longer lives than those who are not. So our theme this year would be join a small group or die. Just kidding. As we enter into his process of becoming sons and daughters of God, what he's already done for us, who he's already made us to be, and we begin to shine that character of him out. You know, the things that will happen to you is the things that happened to my wife, where someone that has known her for so many years looks at her and says, "What a beautiful person you've become. What a beautiful person God has made you into." As we allow him to do his work in us, we embrace what he's already done. We begin to resemble his kids. And so I'm so thankful for Easter. You know, God told us he was coming the first time, and he did. And he's telling us he's coming again, and he will. And I want to be ready for that. Let me pray with you. Lord, thank you for rising from the grave. Thank you for making us sons and daughters of God. And I just pray that we would believe that and trust you with all of our hearts. Trust your process. That we're not trying to behave our way in. We just believe you and trust you, God. You're making us into sons and daughters. What a glorious work. And we can't wait to see what you have in store for us as your kids. We love you. In Jesus' name, amen.
This little boy was riding in the car with his father, and the window was open and a bee flew into the car, and the little boy was deathly allergic to bees, to bee stings, and so he was very panicked and very afraid, and his dad reached out and was able to grab that bee in his hand, and he held it for a minute, and then he let the bee go, and the little boy got scared again, and his dad said, "Don't worry. You can relax. He won't hurt you." And he opened his hand and he said, "See, I took the sting. He can't hurt you anymore." And that's what Jesus did on the cross. He took the sting out of death. And death can't hurt us anymore.